محمد نبينا.
Living a life that depicts the teachings of Islam is the dream of every Muslim. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7 is in collaboration with Muslim Public Affairs Center, NPAC. Everyday Muslim will address the misconceptions on Islam, foster a peaceful coexistence, and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7, simplified understanding of the deen.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته listeners at home I am Abdul Hakim Qasim and I welcome you to another edition of Everyday Muslim Show on Women Radio 91.7 FM Today is Saturday, the 26th day of July 2025, corresponding to the 1st of Safar, 1447 AH. Yes, you heard me right. It's the first day of the second month of the Hijra year, 1447 AH. Alhamdulillah, Rabbi, let me thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the gift of life and the gift of good health that we are able to come here once again to, you know, reach out to you, our wonderful listeners. On this program, Everyday Muslim, we try to address misconceptions about Islam, foster peaceful coexistence within the society, and guide the everyday Muslim on their journey in Islam. Allah the Almighty, the Exalted, says in glorious Quran, Quran chapter 96, verse 3-5. Allah says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Iqra wa rabbukal akram alladhi 'allama bil qalam 'allama al insana ma lam ya'lam," which translates to, "Read, and your Lord is the most generous, most compassionate, who has taught the art of writing by the pen. And he has taught man that which he knew not." You find that, like I said, in Quran chapter 96, verses 3-5. Today, inshallah, we want to delve into a topic that is educational and contemporary as well. And the topic is, when brilliance avoids teaching, who educates your child? When brilliance avoids teaching, who educates your child? And our guest discussant is Hajia Basira Adiroju Sulaiman Shulaj. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right. Well, this is my first time I've actually meeting Hajia. And it might actually be the first time for some of our listeners as well. Now, if you're actually wondering who Hajia Basira is, she is an educator, a mentor, a counselor, and a psychological consultant with over a decade of experience in guiding parents and youth. With a background in English education, counseling, and Islamic psychology from Al Balagh Academy, United Kingdom. Aha, so she's Tokumbo. She's not, you know, Tiwa. She's not homebred, though. So you can imagine we have actually gone all the way to bring a UK trained counselor on the program today. All right, she helps families nurture emotionally intelligent, well-rounded children. As the founder of AWN Consults Limited, Hajia Basira is passionate about empowering women and young people to grow with purpose, values, and resilience. So Hajia Basira, again, salam alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Everyday Muslim.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me here.
All right. So, for our listeners, just for your information, this program is streaming live on Facebook via Everyday Muslim page. All right. Okay. You can log in on Facebook to view the studio and also to send in your comments on the live feeds on Facebook. As well, it's also streaming simultaneously on the YouTube page of WFM. So go to YouTube, type in Women Radio, you'll see it. You can join, the live stream on YouTube. So you see the studio, you see the person talking, myself, Abdul Hakim Qasim, and you also see Hajia Basira. So like I said, today I want to look at when brilliance avoids teaching, who educates your child. And I want to believe that for a lot of us, especially for those of us that are young Nigeria, those of us are actually following trends in the news, We have the case of a young Nigerian who scored 278 in the UTME and actually chose to study education. So, and the whole society gasped in disbelief. They were like, why waste such a high score on education? They ask. You're wasting talent. You're wasting that score. Why not change to medicine or law? Do something more worthy. And the young lady replied that, if you feel that you're telling me that I deserve better because of what I scored in UTME. And she said, no, I'm not actually doing education a favor. Education actually deserves the best. So that struck me. So Hajia, why exactly does our society equate brilliance with every other profession other than teaching? You know, we have this attitude that, you know, it is the not, the dullards or those who actually do not, those that are not doing well, those that are kind of like average and could not meet with, their dream courses that should probably settle, you know, that's the word, settle for education. You have our tertiary institutions that, you know, when you probably choose other courses and you can't meet up with the cutoff and they're like, oh, let's compensate you, and they actually compensate people with education. So this kind of reaction that people gave to this particular lady, so what does this reaction actually reveal about how we truly value education and those who actually even make education possible? The teachers.
Thank you very much. I really give thanks to the Almighty, the one and only, the one without a beginning and the one without an end. And I will say that, you know, when we lack some informations, when we don't really have a knowledge about some things, we get to kind of mix things up.
Yeah.
Then we try to kind of assume and give interpretations to what we don't really understand.
Yeah.
Apart from the general saying that teaching or teachers are the mother of all profession.
Yeah.
Definitely, when you understand the reason why you have to be a teacher, because I will tell you, everybody is a teacher.
Everybody.
All professionals. If you are a professional, then you are a teacher.
Okay.
Because you cannot be a professional without you teaching whatever you've learned.
Not everybody teach what they learn, but every potential professional, every professional is a potential teacher, because it is expected that a person would have the knowledge.
Exactly.
And can teach what possibly we believe they can teach, because as an educational practitioner myself, I also know that, yeah, it's not everyone who has knowledge about something can actually teach that thing. They know.
My dear brother, I don't know if you had this kind of experience of what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
If you work in any setup,
yeah,
any setting at all, there is no how they are not going to teach.
Yeah.
Go to all these big companies, the doctors, they have seminars.
Mm-hmm.
So who teach them? They look for those are more knowledgeable among them to give up the seminars, give up these something. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Definitely they are teaching.
Yeah.
And they go for training before they are able to come out and tell you that this is what this company is all about.
Absolutely.
They will tell you, bring up your what's it called, your slides, let's see what you have for us and everything. Mm-hmm. So during that process, it's teaching.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is, the fact that we lack some knowledge and information make us usually feel that teachers are less of profession.
Yes, yes.
Do you understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah. But some people would even debate whether teaching is a profession.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's lack of information.
Disheartening. Seriously.
I understand. But
it
I think there is an awareness now. And I feel that's why we have a girl. Look at it last year, 2 years ago, 3 years back. You won't see something like this come up.
Oh.
If I had a training with some of our young youth, those are past that just finished our EC, so they had a graduation and I had a talk with them. I was not like, what do you want to become in life?
Education.
I was so amazed. For the first time in my life, I saw a boy raise his hand and tell me, I want to become a teacher.
Allah.
I had to compensate that boy because
seriously.
I felt proud. Proud of myself. Like,
seriously.
I've never go to any garden and you ask a young youth that, what do you want to become? No, they want to make money.
Yes, no.
They want to make money.
Ah.
So invariably, that question addresses, there's nothing I can say than lack of information.
Okay, yeah, that's what probably makes people to do that. All right,
yeah.
Good. If that is the case, then there are many brilliant individuals who actually shy away from teaching, including those young people like you talk to. Some of them are very brilliant, and teaching never crosses their mind, actually. They rather mention other professions than probably talk about teaching.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's not necessarily because they lack knowledge or they are incompetent, but because of the general societal perception about the profession in itself as, a field, a discipline that is not rewarding enough, especially economically speaking, or probably because of the way society even perceives it, that it's actually below your potential. Like that lady that scored 270, they're like, he's like, you just want to waste this score. You're too good with this score to actually settle or select or pick teaching as if, first choice course, and not probably something that is offered as a compensation. So from your wealth of experience, what do you think are some of the systemic and cultural factors that drive the best of minds away from the classroom instead of actually even attracting them to? Because I feel like if you have brilliant people, they should actually be the best because they have the knowledge and they are the ones that can bequeath such knowledge to those that are coming after them. And if that then becomes the case where the most of our brilliant minds are probably shying away, who are those then that would eventually probably teach our children?
Yeah, thank you for that question. But I'll tell you, in this our present day society, the economy, the way the government have kind of treated the teachers or education as in general, if you go to these university of educations and everything, you see how the way they are treating those lecturers, it's nothing to write home about. So there is no,
I can relate.
There is no student or a child or even an undergraduate that will see their lecturers in that condition and feel they want to go back into that kind of situation.
Because I can understand, because you're saying like, so is this what you if I decide to choose it, then probably no.
So financially, then in terms of how the cultural factors around that thing, because if you go home and kind of maybe your parents are trying to introduce yourself to other family members, and they say, this is my daughter, she's a teacher. They will not even feel free to kind of let everybody know that that's your profession. You know, that kind of, it gives that child this lowest kind of esteem,
inferiority complex.
She will not, or he would not want to go into that kind of profession. But in a situation whereby they are being accepted, do you understand? And they realize that this profession is something that worth our time, our competence, our that brilliancy. We need those that are brilliant in that field. Do you understand? Then you realize that they will have a change of heart. And basically, our parents, they need to change the way they perceive some things, because most of these things happens through them. Because they will be the one to tell you, how can you have this kind of score? And you just want to go, you are doing something below your capability. I was talking to one parent and she was telling me, my child said, I'm the one that want her to become a doctor. And I said, why? You would have said something that make that child say that. She was not like, yes, what I'm trying to say is, we know her capability. She's very brilliant. She's this, she's that. And I said, why? Do you even know what she's good at? Do you understand? Because when you train your child and you give your child the 4-7 years as a prophet has already advised, if you nurture your children based on those 4-7, second 7, and the third 7 years, you will definitely be able to allow them do what they deserve to do, and they will be able to give back to the society what they have to. Do you understand? Because every child has come with their own potential.
Yes.
So that's what I can say.
There's a level of uniqueness, at least for each child. Every child is unique. Every child is different, and every child have unique possessions that God has deposited in them, and for that reason it's not enough for us to actually compare. And that's why even your brothers will say tabafemo wimo alukompa. If you actually compare one child with another, you probably even be tempted to kill one, because you feel like this is just a waste of time. And just like it's also said that if an elephant were to judge itself by the ability of a bird to fly, then it would consider itself a failure.
Exactly.
So I love the fact that you are telling parents, and I hope parents out there actually listening, that it's not for us to actually put the pressure on them. So invariably, invariably, you're saying that most of these decisions of most of the decision of brilliant students to actually move away from teaching probably stems from the kind of pressure that the parents are giving them, and even the way the perception the society is also given, from at the same time what they themselves can see, or the quality of life
those that are in
teaching, leave and like, no, this is not for me.
I can't settle for this.
All right. I love that. But then, if at the end of the day, the brilliant people avoid education, who are those that will teach our children?
That's what we need to call. That's why we need the attention of the government. That's why they come in. Because they need to start kind of making the teachers feel important, the lecturers, we need this kind of sensitization program, campaigns, conferences on educating these people. Do you understand? Because we need to let them, and we as a person, when last do we call our teachers? We don't have all their numbers, but at least we have contact of some of them. How do we check on them? Do we call them? Do we appreciate them?
You should not wait only for Teachers Day, October 5, to say, let me remember those teachers.
There are people we need to always get in touch with. Do you understand? Because when we do that, the more you appreciate them, the more blessing you get, and the more it's a kind of eye-opener for us. I still get in touch with all of my teacher, my English teacher. I saw her when we just met randomly. I just told her my name. Even with the way I'm dressing, she was like, I just mentioned myself. She said, no, she just hugged me. I'm like, no, long time. How are you? And we still keep in touch. In fact, she gets in touch with me every day. She sent me a daily message.
Wow.
So if we do that often, we would always love that profession because they have deposited life into us.
All right. A lot of times we hear of this term, half-baked teachers. You know, just like almost every profession you have, in the medical profession, you talk about quacks.
Yeah.
Now, in teaching, you talk about half-baked teachers. People talk about half-baked graduates, especially for, faculty of education and things like that. Now, but often that's the end product of a process, I believe. A lot of times, people don't pay attention to how exactly those students, those teachers or graduates of education were admitted in the first instance. And I'm talking about this because this year, JAMB, together with the heads of tertiary institutions in Nigeria, the rectors of polytechnics, the provost of colleges of education, and the vice chancellor of universities, they met and they fixed the minimum tolerable score for applicants, candidates that wrote the UTME this year seeking admission into various tertiary institutions. And in doing that, the university's minimum tolerable score was fixed at 150. Colleges of Nursing, 140. Polytechnics, 100. Colleges of Education, where teachers are trained, 100 over 400. 25% of the total score in UTME is what we are accepting as a minimum benchmark
for those that are going to
train the future doctors, lawyers, engineers. And we complain that we now have the temerity, the audacity to complain of half-baked teachers. Seriously, I don't get it. So now I want to ask you then, how can we reconcile this contradiction? We want the best of teachers, but we want the worst of applicants to actually go into the colleges of education to be trained as teachers. So how do we reconcile this contradiction, and what message are we sending about the importance of teachers in national development, please?
Though it's kind of heartbroken,
seriously.
But I will say it from this angle. if there is enough information set out there for people to understand the importance of education, then we have more people going for that course. And you know, invariably, when you have too much people, they try to kind of make the score higher.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? It's because we have even that 100 they are talking about.
You might still not get applicants.
We might not even get applicants. Do you understand? So that's how ridiculous the thing is. The reason why we have this high score in medicine, pharmacy, and the like is because we have too much demands there.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people going into that field did not even want to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to mention him. There's this hospital when I was still in secondary school. I used to have this health issue. So my daddy said, okay, this is the hospital that you have to go. And I used to hear this information that the hospital, people used to die there. So I was not like, hey, at this hospital, they are telling me to go. And they said people used to die there. Why will I now go to that kind of hospital? So I was like, okay. And since at my own tender age, I was able to kind of have this opportunity of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to kind of know myself and understand myself to some extent. And I'm aware of my environment. So try to kind of, and my workplace then, because I start working at a very tender age, my workplace is not far from that hospital. So I try kind of make investigation, like CID. Like, why did they say these people, this hospital? Huh? I find out that the man does not even want to study medicine.
Oh.
So at the end of the day, he just get people to work for him.
Hmm.
So he doesn't even care.
Oh.
So that was the day I had to go there because of my health. I find out that I was smoking. Do you understand? So since then, I realized that the root cause of all these things are basically how to, when we get to solution, we talk about that. But sincerely, we need to look into that.
Mm.
Let's start desensitization on letting children understand that we have other profession different, or as in kind of different from going for medicine, law, whatever. These children might not even, they don't have that potential.
Some don't even have that.
They don't have.
We're actually putting the pressure on them. And we're trying to force
them. And there's one thing about children, there's one good thing about children. Whatever you give to them, they give to you.
Mm-hmm.
So either they understand it or not. So when they are growing up, you feel like, my child is brilliant, my this is brilliant. You have taken that child into that direction. So you will be brilliant to give you the academic result.
That's what you want.
That's what you want.
So I'll give it to you.
Exactly. But when you look outside Nigeria, you see that they allow their children to kind of, they learn from different angle,
mm-hmm.
apart from this book and pen thing.
Mm,
so they usually allow them bring out their potentials.
Skills and different talents.
Exactly. So there is no how we are not going to be getting this kind of results.
Mm,
so invariably, I will tell you that we need more information, because when we have more people going into that direction, I'm sure there will be something. They won't accept 100 again.
Mm.
That's what I'm sure of.
Yeah, okay. Sincerely, I can't fault this position of yours. Reason being that I'm a Lagos, I'm a Lagosian by birth, by origin, by everything. And being an educational professional, I felt angry when the state government decided to scrap the colleges of education that we have in Lagos State.
Why?
That we don't have enough students, and we want to actually, so we decided to turn it that people. The applicants for colleges of education have reduced.
Yeah.
So, and for that reason, they had to convert it to University of Education. I was like, from what side of the bed did the governor wake up from to announce such a decision? Seriously. Because it's like, you feel that colleges of education are no longer relevant. And the excuse, unfortunately, that the special advisor to the governor on education gave at that time was that, how many students do they have? And we have many students that are actually demanding university education, and there is a limit to what Lagos State University could offer.
Yeah.
So they now had to convert the two colleges of education, Adeniran Ogunsanya College of Education and Michael Otoda College of Primary Education, they converted the two, merged the two together, and formed Lagos State University of Education last week. So I can connect with the fact that probably because a lot of applicants are actually not seeking admission to colleges of education, and probably even for polytechnics, because of even the dichotomy, this HND BSc dichotomy.
Exactly.
You know, so a whole lot of things are actually wrong with us. So probably that's an area we really need to look at, that we need to encourage admission into these colleges and bring out the importance of this college education. So you probably have more people seeking admission there, probably will not have this idea of probably settling for 100 over whatsoever. Exactly. Now, I come to this question that has to do with the fact that for the society, we believe that educating the younger generation is probably just the primary one, the job of the school alone. And for that reason, a lot of us, we become aloof. And we stay away believing that after all, that's their work. But then, how do we help communities around us see that everyone, especially those who probably possess knowledge, who are professionals, who are trained, that make them understand that they also have a role to play in teaching the younger ones? Because I know that even in some places, some countries, you have people in the industry who are invited and they do it out of joy to come to classroom to give back to their communities, and they come and teach for free. At their free time, that because they have already made it, they understand what is out there, so the experience they would give would be quite different from someone who is just probably in the ivory tower in the institution. You are teaching them theory, you don't know, you are not there in the field to know how it is actually being practiced. So how do we encourage people to understand that they all have a role to play in the nurturing of this younger generation?
This will take me back to all either government sectors, the private schools, that there should be a connection between the parents, the school heads, and this community. For instance, I want to give us in a kind of instance, like all this gender-based violence, equality, whatever. You know, all these things are being they brought down back to the community. They go to the CDC, CDAs, to go and kind of give awareness and everything. That is exactly the same thing we have to do in education. Bringing it back to the parents. Do you understand? Bring it back to the grassroots. Then allowing the school, because if you see schools now, when they organize parent-teacher meeting, basically they want to talk about parties. They want to talk about open day, how the parents need to reward the teachers and the things like that. They are not talking about how to connect with the parents to bring out the best in their children. That at the end of the day, even after seeing the counselors, if we have counselors in school, because I'm not sure there is, we just have some few.
There are
few schools.
Yes,
we are not seeing it as something very schools. Important.
Yes.
Because that is what we are even discussing. Where, because I'm doing my MSc in counseling, so some of our professors will tell us, how do we use these schools that have a counselor? Do you understand?
Yeah.
So even after discussing with these children, most of these children have some personal challenges from home. How do we want to bridge the gap between them? In order for us to both the parents, the school heads, the authorities, seeing that this child, this is how this child is supposed to grow. You know, when we start with it together, we will definitely channel that child into that right direction.
Absolutely.
But there is a lot of gaps in that area. So if that gap can be bridged, definitely we'll get a solution to that.
All right. I know quite a lot of times when we talk about nurturing the younger generation, educating our children, the focus is always on Western education, actually. And less attention is being paid to religious education. And especially understanding the fact that Western education alone does not guarantee that people will live responsibly. So, and I want to believe that you as a counselor too must have encountered many families who would assume that spiritual education, religious education is the responsibility of madaris alone, these Arabic schools, Islamia, and you know, we come up with some of these funny names when it comes to anything religious, seriously. And or probably during Ramadan, fasting alone, that's where you should be spiritually upright. Yeah, we'll go for tafsir, we'll go for you know, public lectures and things like that. Now, how can we shift, you know, this thinking and empower parents to become first teachers for their kids, both in faith and character building?
You want me to divert into psychology a little?
It's all well and good.
Yeah.
It's for our listeners. We just want them to get the best out of it.
Yeah. I will still go back to the knowledge base, the information base, because for any child, either spiritually, education-wise, whatever, still boils back to the parents. Because that's the foundation.
Absolutely.
And that's why, what did the prophet say? He said, if you are looking for a wife, look for the one that the land is okay for you to put
it's fertile.
In. Do you understand?
Absolutely.
So, in that...
Be very good. Be selective.
Be selective. In that regard, we will realize that there is a lot of importance in what is coming out from that marriage, which is the root cause. Do you understand?
Absolutely.
So that foundation is very, very important. And psychologically, children take after their parents. I was talking to somebody that wanted to open a school. I was telling that child, that person, that he said, you're supposed to have a school. And I said, no, I cannot have a school now. And I said, you're supposed to have a school. Somebody like you, you need to have. And I said, how, if I have a school, I might have just like 10 children. And I said, why? And I said, because I'm going to look at the parent of the child I'm going to get to put in my school. Do you understand? If they are the type that will not listen to correction, if they are the type that will not go with me, that we don't have the same mind, I can't work together with them. And that's because that is the basis.
Okay.
So, but nowadays, parents usually kind of divert the attention to all the mudaris, even the school heads. If anything goes wrong with their children, they'll go to the principal, the teacher. Why did my child do like this? Why did my child behave like this? Why did he got this kind of mark? Do you understand? Meanwhile, the fault is from them. You have to work together. It should be a collaboration, not for the mudaris. And there's this thing again, most times they believe when the child is out of hands, that they feel that they can now send that child to madaris.
We have turned,
to a rehabilitation
God
center.
Bless you. That's what I want to say.
Yeah. So, they believe that's
like
where
a,
they will
like
be
like a remand
modified.
Home.
Yeah.
So, social deviants.
Exactly.
That those are the people who will now turn over to malams.
And at the
this
end
boy
the...
is already something. Is like something
exactly.
is wrong with his brain now. Yeah, they say you people have something like this kind of exorcism that you do.
Yeah.
So this boy is no longer he's not behaving normal again. And I feel like something is wrong somewhere. Afa, please help us pray now. You people know how to pray.
Yeah, let's in fact, they will even give. They will dash the child.
So imagine.
So that's everything is just a kind of orientation, which is very, very wrong.
So it means we have a warped orientation
about
the religion
is.
The role of teachers, whether it's religious teachers, whether it is conventional school teachers, because even for this Western education that a lot of people talk about. Many parents have actually abdicated their responsibilities to the schools. After all, I'm paying school fees.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I'm trying to imagine that how many hours do these children spend in school?
That's
and how many parents, how many hours do they spend with their parents at home? It's all right, you're still listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7. We'll go on a short break. When we return, the program continues. Please stay with us.
You know what Islam is. It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Do you It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, complete way. It's a complete way.
If you just joined us, you are still listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. And we are discussing when brilliance avoid teaching, who educates your child. So when those who probably who possess the knowledge, who are very brilliant, who are respected in the society, when they avoid teaching, then who are those that we expect to actually nurture our younger generation? And our guest discussant is Hajja Basira Diriju Sulaiman Sholaja, an educator, a mentor, a counselor, and a psychological consultant with over a decade of experience in guiding parents and youth. She is a proud product with a background in a proud product of Albalag Academy in the United Kingdom, with her background in English education, counseling, and Islamic psychology. She helps nurture families emotionally. She helps families to nurture emotionally intelligent and well-rounded children. And as a founder of AWN Consult Limited, she is passionate about empowering women and young people to grow with purpose, values, and resilience. You can be a part of this discourse by calling the number 07000-917-917. I'll take that again, 07000-917-917. Alternatively, you can call the number 091-55-917-917. That is 091-55-917-917. The toll free line for our female callers is 0800-1235-917. 0800-1235-917. You can also send a message via SMS or WhatsApp to the number 08155-917-917. That is 08155-917-917. Messages to the number. All right, we have a caller on the line. Hello? Hello? Assalamu alaikum.
Hello?
All right, so what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Masoud Abdulkadri. I'm calling from Ikorodu.
All right, glad to have you. So let's have your comments, a question, a contribution.
I just want to greet you two guys.
Thank you very much.
I want to say thank you very much. I'm enjoying your program.
All right, Jazakum Allah Khairan. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you there. All right, thank you. All right. Thank you. So you can also help us extend the message to other members of your community. Let them also listen. So, all right. So the program is also streaming live on YouTube via WFM YouTube page. So go to YouTube and type in Women Radio 91.7. So you would see, the red colored, logo of Women Radio. So there you can click on the live button, so to see what is going on in the studio. So you see the presenter, you also see our guest discussant. So we are, like I said, we are discussing when brilliance avoids teaching, who educates your child. So, Hajja Basira, we know quite all that for a lot of Muslims, for Muslims generally, at first Allah himself has actually told us that we have the best of example in Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So he was also a teacher, and like I always tell people, see me, I love that the fact that I'm a teacher, because I'm actually I'm following the footsteps of the prophets. So it's a prophetic profession. Can imagine that. I even love the sound, prophetic profession. Come on, all right, yeah. As a student of English, that sounds wonderful. All right, so the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, whenever he taught, wherever he found hearts ready to learn. So he actually doesn't wait for classrooms or titles or special sessions, purely organized for such. Any avenue for him to actually pass his message across to people, he does that. So this spontaneity and circumstantial approach to teaching, how should this model reshape our modern understanding of who a teacher is and what qualifies as education?
Thank you. I want to use myself as an example.
All right.
Somehow. Me, I have a teenager.
Okay.
So most of the time, I might just be like, please you come. Fatima, please come. initially I might just want to call her to kind of sense an errand or something. I might just sense something and I'll just be like, I'll start talking. And at the end of the day, if I check the time, it's like 30 minutes. I don't say, so we've been here since 30 minutes. Something like that.
Yeah.
So why do I do that? At a point, my husband used to do something. He'd be like, what did you tell that child that time? Do you remember? And I said, I did not remember. He said, I will start recording for you because some things you say it without you even knowing, and there are some facts there.
Yeah, very spontaneous.
So most of the time, for these are for women, let me, because of where we are, and even for men, we shouldn't wait for an appropriate or a kind of a refined setting to say that we want to teach our children or anyone around us. Because during the time of the prophet, you know, sometimes they learn in war. You know, that is some
different situations.
There was a time, was it some, there was a companion asking our mother Aisha that, can you describe the prophet to us? And he says, oh, no, there is no any description other than the Quran is the prophet.
It's a walking Quran.
It's a walking Quran. So there are a lot of instances. Like, how do you do your guslu? If like married people, if you kiss yourself, are you going to use your ablution? Is it deficient? Like that. It is not something they had to sit down to learn.
To learn one by one. It is something like that.
So we shouldn't wait until that. Because if we continue to wait, a lot of things will be going wrong. Okay, when we were coming, I was trying to kind of send an information to my children. I was trying to call them. I didn't get through. So later, my husband called and he was trying to give the information. I was sleeping. I was trying to kind of sleep, like, let me have 10 minutes sleep or something. So I just say, please, just give me the phone. You won't pass the information the way I will pass it. I said, hello, do this. Okay, put this on. Like, I just gave the information. I gave the phone back to him. And I said, you've said I should help you pass and you won't get it. Do you understand? So there is a kind of bond. Mothers should take notes. We shouldn't wait for an ideal time to pass information to both our female children and our male children. There is no discrimination in terms of passing that information. Because these boys we are talking about are going to become men and the rijal of tomorrow. And they need this proper attention. There was a day I forgot that I have not teach my child. He's 12 and I've not taught him about when he gets to a puberty stage and is in boarding school. I had to run. I was on traveling. I told myself, I forgot something. I said, you said you are coming home tomorrow. Why today? And I said, yes, today. I have to come home today because I forgot something and he's going back to school. I don't want any other person to help me tell him. So I had to tell him myself that I can't remember if I've mentioned it before, but now he's growing older. And I heard about a boy that, guess what, a teenager at the age of 12. I said, no. I had to tell him myself. And I sat him down, hello, do you know when something, yeah, like this happened. This is how it is. I tried to kind of explain things to him. And the issue of the 7 years...
777 model of the prophet. You mentioned it earlier. Probably this is an opportunity for you to explain.
The first 7 years is the kind of the formative stage for the children. And that time is kind of somehow difficult. We always feel like they are not hearing us. How are they going to understand something? But that time is the time, the way me I used to explain it, is the time parents need to be more spiritually inclined. They must be conscious of everything they are doing, both private and in public. Because whatever we do, the children imitate. I'm talking about, especially the men, immediately we give birth to those children. The fathers, they need to be very careful. Very, very careful. In fact, if it's something that maybe is an habit that we do, we need to stay away from those things. Because either they see us or did not see us. I don't know. Allah is so kind of perfect. I don't know. Because all these things has been explained in the Quran. But when we are doing it, psychology, I was just like, that was the time I had to run away from my class because I was like, no, why are you people telling me what? As in, it's kind of magical somehow. Like, how is it possible?
That, do you understand? This information has been available to us over 1,400 years ago.
So there is a way this thing works. We need to be very careful. That first 7 years is the most critical stage. Very, very sensitive. We need to be. And the second 7 years is that another stage. where we feel like probably they are entering, they are into their mid-teens. Now we feel like, we feel they are growing wings. We want to allow them feel free. We need to also be careful.
Mm.
We need to be very, very careful and listen to them more.
Mm. All right. Yeah. For context sake, a lot of you probably don't understand. Prophet ﷺ gave us a model with regards to nurturing our kids. And he said, play with them for the first 7 years. Teach and nurture them, and train them in the next 7 years and advise them for the next 7 years. Now, if you look at that very critically, Hajjah Basira told us the first 7 years is a formative stage. But at that point, you need to bond with them. It's not serious so much because it's not everything they can understand. But they are actually watching everything that you do. And they mimic everything that you do at that stage. They don't understand, but they just see you doing it and they replicate it. The next 7 years, they start asking questions. They are conscious of some things. And that is where anything you do, they say, why? Mommy, why? Daddy, why did you do this? Why did you do that? At that point, that is when you now teach them so many things that they need to learn. At those times, if you want to force them, enforce the discipline, enforce morality, enforce spirituality, it is at that stage you need to do that. And the last 7 years, at that point, you can't beat them again. 14 years, a child is already 14, 15. Cane does not work. That's adolescence. So they see themselves as adults and they are not yet adults. So they want to do what adults are also doing. So at that point in time, it's more of advice and support that you give. Such that at the end of the day, by the time they are 21, the relationship they would have with you and the necessary things they ought to know, they would have it. And they will not be able to depart from it as they grow and as they actually, think about probably settling down and what have you. So that's why it is called the 777 model of, child upbringing in Islam. Prayer Allah makes it easy because I know it's not easy. A lot of time parents will say, all this you are saying, it's not easy. Hey, this economy, in this, in that. Hey, before we go and look for money, you see, we don't even have time. And the reality is a lot of parents don't even know.
If they give the time now, they will enjoy it later.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. And I hope they are listening. I just hope they are listening. Now, because we have talked about, this issue with our education sector, nurturing our children, teaching them. So now let's talk about solutions. So what bold, actionable steps can communities, schools, and faith-based institutions take to make education attractive again? And in this time, to reward teaching, or in raising the bar of entry, or probably making the young people proud to say, I want to teach. So what are those things that you would recommend for us? Because for me, that's the most important thing as far as today's program is concerned. Let us recommend to people what they need to do. Because personally, I'm actually frustrated with the way teachers have been treated, either by the government or even by the society.
Even by the private.
Don't even go there. Those ones are slave masters. So they feel like for everything, we must milk the effort out of you. And they pay miserable amount as compensation or in terms of salary. So let's not even go there. But at least if government is setting the standards and the society itself values and appreciates the worth of teachers, then probably it will dovetail to these private school owners.
I'm sorry, I'm going to answer this question a different way.
No problem.
I'm going to start by telling you that every individual, every potential teacher, or any teacher, anybody that intends to teach, should first of all appreciate him or herself. Appreciate yourself. Intrinsic be proud motivation. Of yourself.
Intrinsic motivation.
Exactly. Be proud of yourself. Be ready to go out there and tell people, I'm a teacher. I'm an educationist. Do you understand? You should be bold.
Self-esteem. Build your self-esteem.
Do you understand?
All right.
Which is like the Yoruba people will say, the way you carry your calabash is the way other people will help you. The way you present yourself is the way people will welcome your
relationship. Yes.
Exactly. So, that is that.
Okay.
The fact that you understand and appreciate yourself, you cannot go for an interview as a teacher. And you are during your interview, there are some things, there are some questions that you will ask. probably you got all your questions right and everything, but there will be room for you to tell them what you want. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you should be free mm-hmm. to tell them exactly what you feel you deserve. Mm-hmm. When you start doing that, you are not going into teaching job because you feel that there is no other job to do. Mm. There is no other option. Let me just go and teach. At least they will pay me this kind of amount.
Make them understand that it's a choice.
Yeah. And make them realize that without us, teachers, there cannot be school. There cannot even be society.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? Mm. So when we start doing that, there is no how we will not be recognized.
Okay.
And that is not, this is not a matter of protest.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
No.
It's just a simple thing. Trying to understand and appreciate yourself.
And fasten yourself off.
Yeah. So when you start
realizing
doing,
and understanding the fact that you don't get what you deserve, you get what you demand.
Exactly.
And in making such demands, you must know what you deserve.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Like what was it called? This former president, South Africa, Nelson Mandela, said something. He said, education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world.
Absolutely.
So when an educationist understand this, when a teacher understand this, you will be confident when you are talking anyway. Mm-hmm. And if they are offering you the kind of amount below what you think you can offer them, then you just go. But when you are able to kind of give them, show them the little time you are trying during your interview, you are able to show them your competence, your qualities, your values. You are trying, the way you are even talking, you don't just go for school of education and stop there. Go for other profession. Go for other certifications. Go for seminars. Get more knowledge about build your capacity and know yourself worth. Then people will accept you. Do you understand?
Right.
And when everybody realizes that being an educationist does not mean you are going to be in the classroom,
absolutely.
Then you also know your worth. Then they will value you.
All right.
They will ask for you.
We have this message from Madam Bola. She's one of our regular contributors on the program. She says, good morning, sir. Thank you very much for this important topic. Education in our country is so complex, but our government does not see the importance of treating it with the level of seriousness it requires. What do we expect from the education where the people put in charge are from, political, layabouts? It's just for political considerations that they are made, leaders or managers of the education sector. It says, please appeal to the government, parents, and educators to see it as a trust. Put in place good regulations that must be abided, with, and promote teaching as a pride of the country. Thank you. Madam Bola, thank you very much for that message. So
when we try to kind of understand our worth, definitely we will not be the one looking for them. They will be the one requesting for teachers.
All right.
Do you understand?
Absolutely.
So that, and as our contributors already said, the governments need to start seeing importance in education. Like other, less whatever we are copying from other country, let us copy that too. They value education
in other places
of the world. They value education, they give importance to teachers. That's why you
they're well remunerated in other places.
That's why most of the educationists we have here running away.
Yes, now I remember that 2 years ago the United Kingdom threw out applications for teachers worldwide come to the UK. And many Nigerian teachers applied, actually, a lot of them. And since COVID, the education sector has not recovered because many teachers actually left the education system.
Yeah.
Until today, every day you see vacancies. Yes, every school, there are vacancies for teachers because a lot of people are not actually filling up those, spaces left because they feel like, I deserve better and I'm not getting the best that I deserve from this, profession. All right. I love that. So, jazakumullah khairan. All right. Now, if you would, I want you now, you have this opportunity to speak directly to a brilliant student out there who has been pressured to choose something better, in quotes, than education. So, if you have an opportunity to speak to them, which we want to afford you now, what would you say to them and to their parents?
Yeah, I have these 4 questions that I have in mind. Because if I have a candidate like that with me that I maybe come for counseling or something, the first thing I'll ask you is, how much do you know of yourself? Do you understand?
Okay.
After getting the fact that, you understand yourself to some extent, then what's your goal?
What do you want to achieve?
What do you want to achieve? What are the parents' expectations from you? What are your parents' expectations? Then where did you want to... Well, and as in, ask the parents, where do you want to see your child in the next 5 years? Answering those questions, I know that their question will be like, I want them to be psychologically all right, spiritually okay, financially okay, economically, I want them to be everything okay, like that. The point is, when we see a child that is self-aware, that knows he or her works, definitely there is a way for that child. We don't have to stress much. Do you understand? Because the child has already give us that landmark for him to tread. So all we need to do for that child is just to guide the child towards that direction. Do you understand? So if I know this kind of child and I've kind of asked that question, then it's an opportunity for me to let that child know that you are good in that field that you've chosen as an educationist. And I'm so proud of that girl that's called 278.
Yes.
And she insists on them doing education.
In fact, that statement she made.
So I'm so proud. And I'm proud of the kind of parent that raised that child. Even if they are not really kind of proud, like they want to do something else, we are proud of her. We really, really appreciate the fact that she can come out and say that this is what she wants to do. And my dear, if you are listening, I'm telling you, being an educationist doesn't mean you are going to be in the classroom. That doesn't mean you can be in the classroom.
Being in the classroom is one of the best things I can ever do.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, you can be.
Don't limit yourself to the fact that it is all about the classroom.
You know, she can have a kind of her own office and be an education consultant, go out there to train teachers. Do you understand? Absolutely. That's what I mean.
All right. Good.
At least that is kind of appealing to teachers, to parents. They won't be like, you have to be in the class.
Yes. All right.
That's what I mean.
Thank you very much.
All
right. Thank you very much. I'd like to appreciate Haja Basira for Sulaiman Sholaja for the insight that she has shared on today's program. We've been discussing when brilliance are voiced, teaching who educates your child. I will just leave you with this. One of my teachers of blessed memory actually wrote a book, Professor Akonde of blessed memory, said, an engineer dies with his mistake, a doctor buries his mistake, and the society perishes with the mistake of a teacher. So I want us to actually reflect on that. An engineer dies with his mistake. A doctor buries his mistake, just like the doctor you mentioned. And the society perishes with the mistake of a teacher. So what exactly do we want for our society? And the reality is, being a teacher, see, one of the professions, the best of professions in the world is teaching. It's the job of Allah himself. Allah is the first teacher. It's the job of the prophets. He raised them to teach and nurture the society. They taught and they trained people. And for us, that you're teaching, you are the inheritors of the prophets. Then beyond that is now the fact that with teaching, it's also a sadaqah to jariyah, a flowing charity that you continue to earn reward for as long as people continue to benefit from the knowledge that you gave them. Just as if you are also observing, so that even if you are dead, you continue to earn rewards when your students continue to, benefit from your knowledge. All right, you can listen again to this episode or other previous episodes of Everyday Muslim on mpac-ng.org. Scroll down and click on the Mpac Project to view Everyday Muslim past uploaded episodes. Follow Everyday Muslim on social media, Facebook Everyday Muslim, Instagram Everyday Muslim 01. Inshallah, Everyday Muslim will make its way back to your airwaves next week, same time, 11 a.m., same station, WFM 91.7 FM. I'd like to thank the Muslim Public Affairs Center, who has actually facilitated this, and the management of WFM Women Radio 91.7 FM. I remain Abdul Hakim Qasim. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.